Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
You're very welcome back. Tomlin with you, News Talk 106 to 108. Standing in for Sean today. 53106 is the text number, or email afternoon@newstalk.com. Now, this is a totally fascinating story. The Donegal labourer Patrick O'Donnell wrote himself into the history books when he shot Ireland's most infamous informer, James Carey, in the early 1880s. A new book explores this most compelling murder story and Patrick O'Donnell's fate and claims he was the victim of a miscarriage of justice. Sean O'Caron is the author of The Queen versus Patrick O'Donnell, and he joins us now. Sean, how are you today?
Great form, Tom. Thank you very much indeed.
This is a story that has a bit of a personal interest to you, doesn't it, from growing up in West Donegal?
That's for sure, yeah. When I was a young fellow growing up there, I remember, God bless my mother, singing a ballad called, the first line was, "My name is Pat O'Donnell, I was born in Donegal." And it told the story of a man from our neighbouring parish, the next parish, from Gwydor, who became very famous in the 1880s and 1883 when he shot James Carey. Now, I suppose in one sense, Tom, ballads in those days were kind of like social media today. They spread the story around throughout the various parts of the community, but they also pass the story down through the generations. And as a youth, I remember that ballad very, very, very clearly. And it told a fascinating story because it told a story of a man who was born and brought up in the Gaeltacht in Donegal, spent some time in America, and then shot literally to fame when he killed a man off the coast of South Africa, and then is brought to London for a show trial in the Old Bailey. So it was an exotic story with an international story made out of a local story, really.
He literally stepped into the history books, didn't he? And how did you discover this background information?
Well, actually, I knew a little bit about the story in the beginning, but I was working on a film. We had finished a film for Rusk, which is a production company based here in Galway, on the Mamtrasna murders. And we started working on another story, this story, which is set really around the same period, the 1882-1883 period. And it's a fascinating time in Irish history because it's the time of the Land League, it's time of the Land War, it's Queen Victoria is the ruler, is the monarch in Ireland and in Britain. Gladstone is the Prime Minister. And it's a time of unrest, and it's a fascinating period of time. But I had been aware of the story, and then I started digging a bit, and it's actually quite easy to dig into these kind of stories because now a lot of the old newspapers are digitized, so it's quite easy to access that kind of information, the stories as they were reported at the time. So I was able to source a lot of the information through the various archives in Ireland, in Britain, in Cape Town in South Africa, and in Washington. And there's a lot of material in Washington in the Library of Congress there, because as it happens, Patrick O'Donnell had spent a lot of his time in America and became a US citizen, and that dragged the Americans into this story as well. So I was working essentially on the film in the beginning, and then I was invited by a publisher to do a book that would parallel the film, if you like, and that's right. Why the book is out now. It's released by Four Courts Press last Friday, and it's in the shops at the moment, and the film is actually being shown for the first time at the Galway Film Fla tomorrow night in Galway, and it can be streamed by anyone who wants to watch it over the next 3 or 4 days. I think there's a small fee for watching it, but I think right. You go to the Galway Film Fla to see that. It's a 90-minute drama documentary based right. on this really strange story.
Right. Part of what really caught your interest when you were doing research in the National Archives in London was notes that said closed until 1985, and those were notes about an incident that happened in 1883. So you realised there was something in these that people thought mustn't be seen for 100 years.
Yeah, that's any journalist or any person who's involved in media who'd, when you're looking at anything archive and you see something that says closed for over 100 years, you kind of tend to look at that with a little bit more of a forensic examination. And I searched through that particular file with interest, and I came across notes from the trial of Patrick O'Donnell. And the judge who ran the trial, who's the guy in charge of the trial, if you like, Mr. Justice Denman was his name. He was a very meticulous note taker himself, and he took 61 pages of handwritten notes himself during the course of the trial. And the trial only lasted 2 days. Murder trials then tended to be over short and sharp and quickly dealt with, and no great fuss about them. But he'd taken 61 pages of notes, and at the end of the trial, he told the court that he'd been asked by the jury, they had sent him a question in writing, where they had asked him to explain the term malice aforethought. Now, Patrick O'Donnell had been charged with the murder of James Carey with malice aforethought. Now, malice aforethought's a fairly simple enough concept, really. It's that you had badness in your heart and you had planned to do this in advance. And the judge said this is the question he'd been asked, and he defined it, and it was reported in all of the newspapers. So I was actually aware that the newspapers had reported the judge saying that he'd been asked this question by the jury. But the judge had stapled or tied on to the 61 pages of note the actual question from the jury. And when I found the question, I found that it was radically different from the one he told the court he'd been asked. They hadn't asked at all for a definition of malice aforethought. In fact, they indicated that they actually quite clearly understood the concept of malice aforethought. And what they actually said in the question, I just one line, I'll read it for you.
Yeah.
If we find prisoner guilty of murder without malice aforethought, can you take that verdict? So they were saying essentially to Mr. Justice Denman, if we decide that it's murder without malice aforethought, will you accept that as a verdict? So they clearly understood the concept, but the judge dismissed their question. He deflected it. He misled certainly the court and particularly the defence team, because had they been aware that the jury were thinking in terms of that there was no malice involved, yeah, that would equate to manslaughter. And in those days, Tom, manslaughter was punishable by 2 or 3 years in jail, a short prison sentence, whereas there was a mandatory hanging if you were found guilty of murder with malice. So this was really a question of life or death for Patrick O'Donnell.
And the judge was more or less making his mind up that he didn't want that discussed at all, basically.
Well, he certainly didn't. He didn't want to address the issue that the jury were thinking about.
Right.
And, you know, you can't, it's, and I certainly wouldn't like to, I know you can't libel someone who is dead, and you certainly would want to be libeling any justice who's alive, but I would be more conscious about someone who is dead because they can't defend themselves.
Right.
But I don't think there's any other way of interpreting this.
Okay.
That the jury asked a particular question, would he accept that there was no malice involved? Would he accept that as a verdict? And he simply just didn't recognize, he deflected completely that question from the agenda and asked a different question himself and answered his own question, defining malice aforethought. And I think that in itself would suggest to me that there's a very strong case that Patrick O'Donnell should, you know, that there was a miscarriage of justice.
Right.
There's fairly convincing evidence. And it'd be great if the British authorities were prepared now to have a look at the file again themselves. And I mean, you can't bring back Patrick O'Donnell from the dead, but you can correct the record of history. And I'm sure the descendants of the O'Donnell family, and there's a lot of them throughout the country and throughout the world indeed, they would appreciate that being redefined as manslaughter rather than murder.
We said in the introduction that it was one of the most, he killed one of the most infamous people, informer in history. This man that he killed, he's at the centre of the Phoenix Park murders and the Invincibles, these great stories we grew up on our history. To say that he was a hated man in Ireland, that's some understatement, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And he was hated by two different groups of people for two different reasons. He was hated by the authorities, effectively, because he killed two of their own. He killed Lord Frederick Cavendish and Thomas Burke, who was the chief secretary and the most senior civil servant in Ireland. So these were two of the senior members of the establishment. James Kearney was in charge of the Invincibles, who killed them in the Phoenix Park on a May evening in 1882. And when he was arrested by the police, it took them a while. But when he was eventually arrested, he was questioned and threatened essentially that he would be hanged. And he knew that's what was in store for him if he were found guilty. So instead of facing that sort of consequence, he turned state's evidence and gave evidence against all of his colleagues in the Invincibles, and five of them were hanged. And 10 more went to jail. So he was hated by the ordinary people of Ireland as well for being someone who had given evidence, become an informer, given evidence against his colleagues to see five of them hang and 10 jailed. Now, he was being protected by the British authorities. He was being sent off to South Africa to hide, really, basically going into what would be the equivalent of a Victorian-era witness protection program, you might say. And it was by pure accident that he met Patrick O'Donnell on board the ship as they sailed down from London to Cape Town. The two became the greatest of friends. It was a long journey. It was over 3 weeks. It was 7,200 nautical miles. So they started kind of palling around on board ship, and they became so friendly that James Kearney, who was travelling under a false name, under a bogus name, he was using the name James Power, he convinced Patrick O'Donnell not to go working in South Africa. O'Donnell had decided he wanted to go make his fortune in the diamond mines that were just opening up in South Africa at that stage. But James Kearney convinced him to go up the coast of South Africa to Durban with him, and they would work together up there. So Patrick O'Donnell changed his own life plan because of this man, because of his new best friend. And it was only when they were in Cape Town that the story emerged that actually his new best friend wasn't at all James Power, as he thought, but was actually James Kearney, the Invincibles informer, the most hated man in Ireland, the most reviled man in Ireland. And even Queen Victoria in her diary, when she heard he was killed, said, although the killing was well deserved, she said it wasn't a good thing because it showed how the reach of the secret societies. Now, she believed that Patrick O'Donnell was a party of some kind of Fenian secret society sent out to avenge what had happened to the people in Ireland. But in actual fact, O'Donnell knew nothing about the Fenian movement, knew nothing about the Invincibles. He was a man who had spent 20 years of his life in America working as a labourer. He couldn't read or write, although he spoke Irish and English fluently. He never had the benefit of any formal education. So he was a man who was out of his depth in one sense in this whole saga, and this whole saga happening around him. But then when it gets to, he's arrested, obviously, for killing, he kills James Carey, shoots him in the neck, two more in the back as he fell to the floor of the ship. He's then transported back to London to face a trial there, because the British authorities didn't really trust the authorities in the Cape Colony to have a fair trial, because they would have been sort of sympathetic to someone like Patrick O'Donnell in this particular case. Now, he did the killing in front of witnesses, but there's no evidence that there was any political motive to it. No. I think what it reads to me like that he was so upset and annoyed for being misled by his new best friend for the previous 3 weeks, had changed his own plans all because of him,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden he discovered that the whole thing was a pack of lies. When a row erupted, he pulled a gun.
And he's facing a man that half of Ireland would probably kill if they got the chance. It's a fascinating story, Sean. So it's streaming. It's part of the Galway International Film Festival, isn't it, showing at that? And a book as well?
The book is it's in all good bookshops, and it's available, obviously, from the publishers Four Court Press as well.
Great stuff. Sean, thanks very much. Pleasure talking to you today. And I love to press some words.
Moncrief
well.
On News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.